This episode is brought to you by One House. Learn more about our comprehensive hospitality solutions at one-haus.com.
Hi, this is Celia Kutcher, host of Animal Instinct, and you are listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more. Welcome to All in the Industry on Heritage Radio Network. I'm your host, Sherry Bayer. We are coming to you live from Roberta's Restaurant in Bushwick, Brooklyn. It is Wednesday, September 14th, 2016, and this is the 116th episode of this series, which is dedicated to behind-the-scenes talents in the hospitality industry. Today, my guests are the co-founders of a premier food and wine festival in the Pacific Northwest, and I will introduce them in a moment. First, as I do on every show, I will start out with my PR tip. Then later, we will have my speed round game, industry news discussion, solo dining experience, and the final question. As the founder of Bayer Public Relations, I'm going to tip the show off with my PR tip of the week. So today's tip is to be the solution. If you see a need or a gap in the market, why not be the one to fill it? If you're inspired and passionate about something, take the initiative to make it a reality. Don't wait for someone else to create your idea. Do it yourself. You can be the inventor of the next best thing. That's my tip today. Now, I'm very excited to have my guests calling in today from the West Coast. They are Carrie Welsh and Mike Thielen, co-founders of Feast Portland, the fifth annual food and wine festival taking place September 15th to 18th in Portland, Oregon, presented by Bon Appetit, celebrating everything that makes Portland and Oregon great. Actually, awesome, it says here. I don't know why I said great, because it's awesome. Okay, so in addition, Carrie is also the co-founder of Little Green Pickle, a Portland-based firm specializing in public relations, marketing, social media, and web services for the food and drink industry. She previously spent 10 years at Food Network as VP of Public Relations. And Mike is also the principal at Bolted Services, where he conceives, creates, and consults for high-profile food and tourism-related promotions, projects, events, and initiatives nationally. He has made many appearances on the popular cooking channel show Unique Eats. So hello, Carrie and Mike, are you there?
We're here.
Hello.
Hi. Well, welcome to my show. It's great to have you guys on.
We're excited to be here virtually with you.
Yes, yes. And you guys have a lot going on because Feast is kicking off basically as we speak. So I appreciate you taking the time to speak with me here. And before we get into Feast, I like starting with people's backgrounds and find out a little bit more about how you got into the hospitality industry. So, Carrie, do you want to start out?
Sure.
So, your background, like, I know you were at the Food Network for a long time, but like, how did you land there?
Oh, sure. My story is pretty simple. I went to New York University, and landed at the Food Network very luckily right out of college. So I started as an assistant, there. I graduated NYU on a Friday and started at Food Network the following Monday. So it was a very quick, transition for me. And I just worked my way up. I started at the network at a time of humongous growth. Emeril was kicking it up a notch and saying BAM, and Iron Chef Japanese with subtitles and Camp was one of the first projects I worked on. So over the next 10 years, obviously people like Bobby Flay, Rachel Ray, Ina Garten, and Paula Deen, and many, many more were all coming up and becoming celebrity chefs. So it was a great time to be there, and I learned pretty much how to do almost anything as it relates to food. We launched Wii games, cookbooks, and a myriad amount of shows over those 10 years. So lucky for me, I got to be vice president by the time I left, and then felt it was time to move out of New York City. and moved to Portland, Oregon, and met Mr. Mike Thielen.
Great. Okay, so that's where you guys met. So Mike, did you grow up in Portland?
Yeah, I did. I'm one of the few natives. They call them unicorns now in Portland because Portland's one of those places that's become very, very populated with people from all over, which is great. But, you know, I spent my path was very different from Carrie's. I spent it sort of living all over the place, from Madrid to D.C. to San Francisco, working in a lot of various journalism jobs and working in restaurants. And moved back to Portland actually 10 years ago after spending a year in Spain, and became a food writer and a food critic, and found out really quick that I loved doing that, but I really loved kind of being out and about more. So started doing food events, and I just started doing bigger food events. And pretty soon I was doing doing sponsorship and brand development for a big festival in Texas, doing activations within festivals all over the country. I remember being at Aspen Food and Wine in 2010, doing an event with the Oregon Wine Board and Chef Matt Leitner, and hearing about this person, Carrie Walsh, from everyone. When we were saying we're from Portland, they said, "Oh, our friend Carrie's moving to Portland. You have to meet her." And lo and behold, a few months later, we were doing a festival together.
Yeah, how did it come about? You met, like, I just imagine you sitting around having coffee, and you're like, you know, Portland needs a food and wine festival. Let's create it.
Basically, that you summed it up. I mean, really, okay. Right, Mike? It was that we met at Coffee House Northwest in downtown Portland, and we did what Portlanders do, which is, like, meet for coffee. You know, and I still have the Facebook message where I was like, "Hi, Mike Thielen, I'm Carrie Welch, and I just moved to Portland, and I'm so excited to meet you." So we did that, you know, just like the networking thing, because we had both heard about each other. And then, I don't know, somewhere during the discussion, so Mike had ideas. He had the basic outline for the event. He had sponsors and partners that were pretty much lined up and ready to do this thing. And I think, wouldn't you say, Mike, that you just needed somebody to do it with, probably?
Yeah, I mean, my sort of expertise in festivals is really on the partnership side and kind of on some of the business side of it. And, you know, Carrie is just amazing at marketing and PR. And honestly, the other thing, another one of Carrie's hidden talents is she's really good at HR. She always knows, like, when to hire someone, when to bring someone on. So, you know, I think our skills were very complementary, and we just kind of went for it. And literally, I mean, gee, we decided, I think, over coffee, the first time we met, we were going to do this because we both had background in it. And, you know, I think within 3 weeks, I think we had filed the paperwork.
That's incredible. So, I mean,
shotgun wedding.
But I mean,
it was. We didn't even know each other, and we're like, yeah, let's just go into business together. It'll be great.
Well, it's obviously work because this is the fifth annual coming up, and I went to your first one 4 years ago. That's why I'm due to come back because I miss it. But I remember the first year out, I thought it was so impressive what you guys accomplished, and it was so well organized. And I really have no idea, like, how, like, okay, so you decide back then you're going to put on this festival. Like, what's the first thing you needed to do, or how does one plan a festival in around food and wine in a city? You know,
you hire Emily Crowley, our festival director.
Yeah.
That's the
okay.
First thing you do.
Well, there,
and then Mike, I don't
that.
Know. I remember being
right
in some
team.
Pitch meetings
and
with you very early
said,
on.
Emily's
folks
really
like Travel Oregon.
You know, with a festival, there's really three wheels that you have to have to make it work. You have to have sponsorship and partnerships, because you can't do it without underwriting, you know, and you know, then you have to have the marketing and PR, because, you know, you people need to know about it. And that's, you know, what Carrie's expertise and brilliance, you know, came in. And then I think it was about 6 months in, I think Carrie and I realized, oh my gosh, we actually need someone to run this thing. So, you know, I think Carrie can tell the story of how she hired Emily Crowley, but we had sort of talked about it, and I remember getting a text one morning saying, I think I hired Emily Crowley last night.
Okay.
It was at another event on a dance floor, because that's how I roll, or at least how I used to roll. But I feel like when I saw Emily, I knew that she was a talented event person who could actually, like, put up the lights and make sure that the gift bags were distributed and carry boxes and kiss babies at the same time. So that's why I said to Mike, I'm like, we got to scoop her up before somebody else does. And truly her and the team that she's built here, they're the ones that make Feast work for sure.
Yeah, well, I mean, as I said, it's so well executed from my experience in seeing it. And it does take a team. I mean, there has to be a lot of people involved. I can't even... Well, how has the festival grown since the beginning?
Well, we have 6 people that work on the team now instead of 3.
Oh, right, just Mike? 6? So, I mean,
actually,
I'm
7.
Seven.
That's still small.
It's still very small.
Yeah.
Those are full-time year-round people.
Too.
I think, you know, the week of the festival right now, the team swells. I mean, there's probably 40 people who are working on this right now, like, and have been working on this for the last couple of weeks as their primary job. And, you know, there's just hundreds and hundreds of volunteers and brand reps. So, you know, Team Feast, depending on how you look at it, during the weekend at Feast is literally a community of hundreds, if not 1,000 people who are coming together and representing their media organizations, their restaurants, their, you know, the companies with which they work, plus all the staff, the people who we rent the tents from, the people who set up everything, who pull the permits. I mean, it's really quite an incredible thing to see come together every year.
Yeah, so the team works on it year round, is like the 6 or 7. Okay. And then how did you end up with Bon Appetit as the major media sponsor?
That's another fun story, right, Mike?
Yeah, well, the interesting thing, I think, you know, Portland in 2011, I mean, it was really, you know, Feast as we know it never would have happened had it not happened as it happened. But, you know, this was a time, there was sort of a boom of food and wine festivals happening across the country that were kind of different than, you know, people wanted something a little different than you know, some new festivals with new points of view, and people were very interested in Portland at the time. You know, there was kind of a lot happening. Portland was getting a lot of press. You know, and there was, I think it just all came together in this perfect cocktail. But Bon App, I would really say, you know, there were some personal connections with Bon Appetit that were here, you know, at the time, you know, with folks like Kulu Henry, who was the former, you know, PR, one of the former PR people at Bon Appetit, who had worked with the Oregon Wine Board. Andrew Knowlton knew a lot of people here. There were other people on the staff at Bon Appetit, both on the publishing side and the editorial side. So it just, I want to say it came together really naturally. The first time we met with Bon Appetit about 5 years ago, when we were in town for the New York City Wine and Food Festival, I feel like the decision to partner was already there before the meeting even happened. We just walked in, and I think everyone in the room just recognized it as this great fit. Carrie, would you agree with that?
Yeah. I mean, it was just we all wanted to work together. They wanted one of those newer feeling reimagined festivals. We were ready. We were going to do it anyway. So we were very, very lucky that, and I would say it was the same experience in Portland too. The chefs wanted to do Feast. The brewers, yes. The distillers, the farmers, everybody wants to do it and remains wanting to do it. So that's why it works so well, because like right now we're in the middle of there's like a hashtag going around that says Feast Week, because everybody's excited that it's the week of Feast, like it's Christmas or something. And that's just an incredible compliment, and we don't take it lightly.
Yeah, no, that's wonderful. And I mean, I think it's great to have the whole city behind what is a citywide festival. So on that note, we're going to take a little break, and then we're going to come back and talk a little more with Carrie and Mike. So stay with us. This is All in the Industry on Heritage Radio Network.
This is the story of men and women who shed not only their clothes, but also their...
This episode is brought to you by One House. At One House, we noticed that most serious chefs and managers don't hang out in brightly lit offices. So we go out in the field to gather the best talent wherever they may be. We meet and talk to them, like humans used to do back in the day. We are the people people. Our talent sourcing covers salaried dining room, kitchen, and corporate professionals. We thrive in Michelin-starred, James Beard, and mom-and-pop environments alike, from coast to coast. Drop us a line at one-haus.com or at info@one-haus.com for our confidential, up-to-date, and relevant career options, or if you're an operator seeking a culinary or management-level pro.
All right, welcome back to All in the Industry on Heritage Radio Network. I'm Sherry Bayer. My guests today are Carrie Welsh and Mike Thielen. They are the co-founders of Feast Portland, a premier food and wine festival in the Pacific Northwest that starts tomorrow, kicking off. And I'm getting on a plane tomorrow and going to it. So I'm psyched. Let's talk a bit about what happens over these 4 days, like the different events you guys are doing. Am I right? I saw something, 32 events, 13,000 plus attendees, 90 chefs. Is that where we're at now?
Right.
Okay. So what are some of the things?
Like, do you want a little lowdown of what we're doing, Sherry?
Yeah. That's what I like. I want a preview.
Mike, you do it. I feel like I want to hear what your preview is.
Well, thank you. Feast is a mix. I would describe Feast as being a festival that is both intimate and expansive. And it's an event that has big events. So you'll have a grand tasting for 2,500 people on Friday and Saturday. We do a big Latin-themed night market on Friday night, 2,500 people right on the riverfront, having Latin street food. There's a mix of dinners, from ranging in size from 30 people to 1,000 people. I'm sorry, 30 people to 100 people. That would be a big dinner. So you really try to deliver both, the intimacy and the expansiveness of a food and drink festival that you would expect. We do a lot of hands-on classes. So this year you can go take a class, 20 people, and you're learning how a recipe makes it into the book, recipe development with the Bon Appetit test kitchen. So there's a lot happening. And then there's industry parties and after parties and unofficial after parties. This year, in the last week, there's probably been 25 things pop up, everything from an off-the-grid brunch with Andy Ricker of Pock Pock and Danny Bowen from Mission Chinese. It's happening Friday at from 11 to 2 at Whiskey Soda Lounge to a big chef party that happens every year with live band karaoke, where basically all these chefs that you know and love are on a stage with a live band. So there's just a lot happening with Feast, and I think one of the great things about Feast Portland, both the enthusiasm that the city has for this event, which we're very grateful for, and the size of the city, it just kind of takes over the entire town. So when you're in Portland during Feast Week, you can't escape it. It's everywhere. It's in the restaurants. It's on the drink specials. It's in the grocery stores. It's everywhere. So we feel really good about that, and the town has just really embraced and made this festival its own.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm getting more excited as you speak. Carrie, do you have anything? How do you do? Do you have anything to add to that?
No, I think that Mike covered it, because I think that it's the intimate and expansive is exactly right, because that's how we offer something for everyone. A lot of people ask, how much does it cost? And they kind of almost think it's like one event, and it's not. It's almost 40 events, and there is something for everyone in there. Unfortunately, we are officially sold out for this year, but there's always next year.
Yep. Yeah, well, and that's a good thing. I mean, for you guys, it's great. I also, so from the website, I mean, you list the different, the chefs, the artisans, the breweries, cider houses, distillers, tastemakers, wineries. I mean, there's a lot of different people involved. And then you have chefs coming in from out of town. It's not all local. Do you find your attendees are mostly local, or also people coming as making Portland a destination?
We get a good mix. Wouldn't you say, Mike? We have definitely the majority are from Oregon, Washington. But we have a lot of people that, I mean, this is their vacation every year, where they book, around Feast and come out to Oregon for a week, which is really exciting for our travel partners. And we definitely, I think, help, the hotel business in downtown Portland during the weekend, because, people are traveling in from all over. We have 35 chefs that come in from around the country to participate in the festival. We bring in 20 media from around the country. So I feel like even just that, that's already 55 people that are coming in each year to make sure that they know what's going on in our city and our state, which is, you know, I think for all of us, very exciting. But yeah, about, I would say the majority, if you kind of do like a 60-40 local to outside or a 70-30, that's usually about right.
Cool.
Yep, that's exactly right. And then we, you know, last year that 40% of folks who come from out of town were comprised of a mix of 48 states, 10 countries, and 7 Canadian provinces. So we get people from all over.
Yeah, and you also, you have a charity component. Do you want to talk about that a little bit?
We do. Yeah, we work with Partners for Hunger Free Oregon this year. We're addressing their school breakfast program, where we're helping to raise awareness for these programs that are already available on the federal level. And a lot of times schools just need to sign up for them. So Partners provides access to those programs so that kids who unfortunately are not getting breakfast at home can get breakfast before the bell, before they start school and start, you know, trying to learn. Because if you've ever tried to think or do anything on an empty stomach, it is kind of impossible. So, you know, in Oregon, 54% of kids live in poverty, which is a lot. That's over half the kids here are unfortunately living in that circumstance. So we're trying to help make sure that they have what they need to get their school day going.
Yeah, no, that's wonderful that you're doing that. It's nice that it's, you know,
yeah. And we've raised over $230,000 over our past 4 years, for hunger relief. So we're, you know, we just want to make sure that everybody knows that there is a mission behind this and a reason that you can feel really good about besides the incredible food and drink that you're going to have at Peace.
Right. No, it's great. What do you enjoy most about producing an event? And then what would you say is the biggest challenge or something that's hard about it? I mean, it's probably all hard and also all fun. But is there anything that stands out?
You go first.
Okay, I'll go first. What do I enjoy? I mean, the reason why Feast, I think, works so well, you know, there are, you know, myself and Carrie and Janny and Emily and the rest of the team, you know, all involved. But, you know, our skills are very specific. So I think probably, you know, what we do within Feast, even though we collaborate, you know, the program is a collaboration, the chefs that get invited is a collaboration, but we all have, I think, our own point of view. For me, what I enjoy most is really establishing the partnerships. I love working with other organizations. I like bringing businesses together. I like connecting chefs to, you know, some of our sponsors. And I think what I'm personally most proud of with Feast is just seeing all the great relationships that have come out of it. You know, not only just, you know, people who, you know, who came to Feast and now live and work in Portland, or, you know, chefs who met at Feast and then they go to other cities and they do collaborations, or they meet up at other festivals, you know, or collaborations, you know, between businesses that have come out of introductions we've made at Feast Portland. So I'd say for me, that's the most gratifying thing that I just love to see, because it makes the festival feel like something that endures just beyond those 4 days. I think what I like least, it's hard to say what you like least. I think ask me on Sunday, because usually by then, you know, I'm really good at injuring myself during Feast, so I hope that doesn't happen this year.
Oh, no.
And I usually lose my voice. So probably losing my voice is what I like least.
Okay. That's a good answer. What about you, Carrie?
I think the challenge, our biggest challenge, I would say, as a team is topping ourselves every year. We set the bar high and we take it really, really seriously. And I know that is something that everybody tries to do in their businesses. But for a business that you have one weekend a year to show what you're doing, we get one chance. And so we try to make it just the biggest, best, baddest weekend that it can possibly be. And so the pressure to do that every single year, I would say, is by far one of the biggest challenges for me, to make sure that, you know, even the promotion of said festival is bigger, better, faster every year. So, but what a wonderful challenge to have, because this is our job. And, you know, I really enjoy being able to tackle it every year. And especially since, like Mike said, we have a team of people who are good at different things, but then are also able to come together. So that's why the challenge is there, but it's not insurmountable because of that. My favorite thing about working on Feast, honestly, is walking into those events just before they open every single year. It does not get old. It is an overwhelming, gratifying, cavelling feeling, like all of those words. I feel all the feels, Sherry, when I walk into those events. And because it's all worth it. It's beyond worth it. You know, everybody loves the events. They have a great time. You know, we're lucky that our team, they know how to do this like clockwork now. So I feel like for us, it's just an incredible gift to be able to see the thing that you envisioned 5 years ago in a coffee shop come to life every single year and be bigger and better every year. I'm a lucky girl. That's the bottom line.
No, I love that. I love that you can feel the feel. I mean, you work hard at something. You want to appreciate it and feel good. So I'm glad that's your favorite thing. I think that's terrific. Now, yeah. I have last question before we take a break. So on my last show, on episode 115, I had on David Allen Bernal. He's the CEO of Coastal Luxury Management, and that includes Pebble Beach Food & Wine, LA Food & Wine, Restaurant 1833, and Cannery Row Brew Company. So festival event planners, he wants to know, what was the most non-super secret crazy thing that's happened at Feast Portland? And then also off the record, like at another point off the show, he wants to know the thing that you can't say on air. But but for the show,
my cell phone number is. No, I'm
kidding. What's something crazy that's happened?
Oh man, crazy! What isn't crazy that happens during Feast, Mike? I mean.
We've done everything
from like breakup fights to like, we have after parties that go till 2 o'clock in the morning. I mean, what's crazy is Mike had 1 year I was, pregnant, which was stupid during Feast.
And well, you can't
Mike
help
had
that.
To do after parties till 2 o'clock in the morning and then get up at 7 and do all the morning shows. I mean, I brought my 2-week-old child to Feast and tried to get him into the grand tasting and got rejected. So many things happen during your life, and then he still goes on, and that's kind of amazing. I don't know, Mike, what's your craziest story? We haven't had to bail anybody out of jail. That's good news.
No, but I think what you said in year one with that, well, of course, we're not going to mention names, but, there was a party once where there was almost a fight between two rather prominent people, and, every food blogger in the country was in the room, so... it was our first year, and I remember thinking, okay, I don't know if this is a great thing or a bad thing. So that happened. Carrie, is the festival publicist, is it okay that I just said that?
Yes, approved.
Okay. Other things, it's chaotic when you bring, people together, but mostly it's been pretty incredible. There's been little things that have happened, but when you bring that many passionate people together, awesome things happen. What somebody asked me last week, they're like, what's the biggest chef diva moment? And, what's the craziest demand we've ever gotten? Reality is chefs are creative types. They make incredible things. They inspire us. So it's an honor to work with them. So, we get a lot of crazy requests and we do our damnedest to accommodate them because we want, for us, it's an honor to work with these creative people. And, we do our best and the team does their best to try to, rise to the occasion and respect that creativity because that's out of that comes great things.
Terrific.
That's so true. I feel like our team is we're like dorks for it where we're like, do you need baby ostrich eggs in 2 hours? You got it. We're on top. We're going to go find it. It's exciting to do those things.
Panda meat, we'll find it.
And I believe those are real requests.
No, not those things.
Oh, okay.
Like baby ostrich eggs and panda meat. It's kind of sad.
I'm like, well, they could be. Great. Okay. I think you answered the question well. I think David will be satisfied.
Yeah, tell David we'd like to go for a drink sometime and talk about it.
Okay. I will do that. I want to be there too.
Yeah, you can come.
Okay, cool. All right, we're going to take another break here and we're going to come back and we're going to play my speed round game and then talk some industry news. So stay with us. This is All in the Industry on Heritage Radio Network.
for this commercial break is brought to you by TaxStar. And this one's called Walking Like a Cowboy.
We're back. This is All in the Industry on Heritage Radio Network. I'm Sherry Bayer. My guests are Carrie Welsh and Mike Thielen, the co-founders of Feast Portland. It's time for my speed round game. So Carrie and Mike, what this is I'm going to name a couple of things. It's a either or preference situation, and you just pick your favorite. So are you ready?
Ready.
Ready.
Okay, here we go. Eat in or eat out?
Out.
Out.
Wine, beer, cocktail, or mocktail?
Wine.
Can we say all the above?
You can. There are no rules in my game, so yes, you may. How about tasting menu or a la carte?
A la carte.
A la carte.
Small plates or large plates?
Small.
Agree, small.
Okay. You guys are compatible here. Communal table.
I usually say the opposite.
Oh, really? Well, there's some more. Let's see. Communal table or chef's counter?
Chef's counter.
Either.
Okay. Tipping or all-inclusive charge?
All-inclusive charge.
Oh, interesting. How about Chelsea Market or Pine Street Market?
Oh, Pine Street.
Depends on what day you ask. But I'm kidding. Pine Street Market's great.
I'm looking forward to checking it out because it's brand new,
it's
right?
Really cool.
Okay.
Yeah, brand new.
Yeah, I'm excited to see that. How about, if there's a difference, food trucks or food pods? What's
pods.
That?
Sorry, I have a train going by
that's,
my office.
That's okay. It brings character.
I say cart.
Carts. In, well, they're called, from Portland, the ones around, like, the parking lot, are they called carts or pods? I thought they were pods.
A cart is the actual vessel, but when you have two or three of them clustered together or more, they refer to it as a pod. So both answers are correct.
Okay.
Well, we don't really have many food trucks because there's not a lot of mobile, mobile trucks that go around compared to other cities.
Right. Well, from being there, that was the first time I had seen those pods. It was very cool. So, okay, two more. Cheese plate or dessert?
Dessert.
Dessert.
Manhattan, Brooklyn, or Portland?
Portland all the way.
All right. That's it. That's the game. You did well. Some industry news. There are a couple big articles that came out recently. One of them was in the New Yorker, and it was a profile. Pete Wells Has His Knives Out was the title, by Ian Parker. And this was talking about the New York Times critic, Pete Wells, and about his how he approaches reviews and how restaurants react to them. And it was a good read. I felt, you know, there were some points he made about that he didn't like to give 1-star reviews because people tend to not like them. Like, why are they deserving that level? Why can't they, you know, like, I don't know. It was interesting. I didn't know 1-stars were hard for him. And he noted how he's regularly spotted. So sometimes his meal is slower than others. What did you guys think of this piece?
I thought it was amazing. You know, first of all, it was very well written, and you don't see, you know, you got to love the New Yorker for that, because you don't see as much really high quality food writing anymore, or writing about food writing, as it were.
Right.
But I really enjoyed it, because you really got to know him through that article. Like, I could almost picture him in my mind and the way that he eats. And, you know, I think that reviewing is an incredibly difficult process, although I would also say conversely that none of us truly understand what chefs and restaurateurs go through, the battle that they go through on a daily basis just to keep their businesses open and good. So I thought it was pretty fair on both of those fronts.
Yeah, I agree with that. I do think I feel I have a better understanding of him and what it's like to be a reviewer, and it's hard, you know? I mean, it's very hard. I don't think I could do it.
I think the weight of it, you know, of like they have, where he was describing about, you know, how he knows that he could close restaurants. Some of the local reviewers here in Portland have said the same thing, that, you know, it really does weigh on them as they're writing articles. I mean, Mike, you used to do it. Did it weigh on you when you were writing about somebody and you knew that you could kind of potentially negatively affect their business?
You know, there's one thing I think. I never enjoyed writing bad reviews. I will say this, though, and this is, there are critics, you know, when you're part of that circle of critics. I mean, there are critics who will come right out and say the nasty reviews are the ones they like writing the most. I wouldn't say that's the case with most critics, but there are some of those out there. So I don't think Pete Wells is one of those people. I think he's fair. I also think that, you know, what I got from that article was, you know, there was the reference to Craig Claiborne in the beginning of the article, and I think that, you know, Pete Wells is upholding a tradition of food writing that is not adhered to so much. I mean, around the country, you know, in L.A., the critic is no longer anonymous. Adam Platt is no longer anonymous. I mean, if you go on and you think about all the rules that food critics abide by, it's not the traditional rules no longer apply in most markets. And that's not a bad thing. It's just sort of a reflection of where we are with food journalism. But what's so great about Pete Wells is, you know, he and the New York Times still play by those rules, and that, you know, having food criticism that is fair, where the critic goes three or four times, where they wait 3 or 4 months before they write the review, I mean, that's just something in this age of Yelp and blogs that you don't see as much anymore. So, you know, thank God for Pete Wells.
Yeah, no, true. And I mean, he talked in the article about how he wasn't excited about writing the negative review that came out on Per Se. And that ties into the other article I had, which was in Town and Country. It was titled Thomas Keller on That New York Times Review and the Future of Per Se by Gabe Ulla. And it was another really, really well-written article. And, you know, it was the first time Keller talked about the review, where this is where Pete Wells took him from 4 stars down to 2 stars, which pretty much shocked the industry. And I think it says it shocked Keller. And, he says he in it that he admits maybe we were complacent, but I don't know that I enjoyed reading that one too. I feel like I got to know Keller and his take and you know, better.
I think what from that whole controversy with Keller, it was shocking and refreshing to see him just be so honest about it and to kind of admit in a way, you know, not fully, you know, kind of. Mm-hmm. To defend himself a tiny bit, but also just to almost like just accept the criticism. And in that article saying, you know, that sometimes getting kicked in the teeth is the best thing that can happen to you. You know, I mean, anybody who's doing something creative, I always think that food is so interesting because for chefs, their art is on a plate, has to be beautiful, but also edible and taste good. I mean, there's really just not a lot of art that you eat. And I think that for those chefs to just maintain that level of quality on all those in all those areas is extremely difficult. And I feel like for Thomas Keller, he recognized that maybe the quality had slipped, and it forced him to reevaluate his own business, like anybody would do. Like if something like that were to happen in our businesses too, we would probably react the same way. You know, just I'm sorry we failed you is what he said, and I'm just like, oh my gosh, you know, good for him. He really, as a business owner, you have to accept responsibility and fix it and move on. And I thought that that's why he came off so classy in this entire thing. Because he didn't debate it. He just accepted it.
He's classy. I mean, he is. He takes the high road.
He's Thomas Keller. He's classy.
Yeah, and you know? He's so well-respected. And,
you know.
Yeah. Go ahead.
I have one comment on that article. First is that's the article by Pete Wells, you know, kind of shocked everyone, but. You know, Ryan Sutton wrote the same article for Eater a year earlier. People mm-hmm. don't talk about that one as much, I think, because you know, obviously New York Times is sort of the reviewers of the, you know, it's the ultimate review. But I think that for a lot of us who follow, you know, a lot of us who follow food journalism, I think that one didn't have as big of an impact. Maybe because Eater is a newer, newer media source. I think a lot of people still think of Eater as like a food blog, but, you know, I think, you know, Eater has been actually doing some incredible restaurant criticism the last couple of years. And, you know, people like Bill Addison and Ryan Sutton work for them now. But, you know, that article, it was very similar to what Ryan wrote a year before that piece came out in the New York Times. But, you know, the way that both of these pieces, like in the manner that Pete Wells is a true critic and Ryan Sutton is a true critic, Keller is a true chef. I mean, that level of humility is not something people see as much anymore. I think a lot of times when chefs get bad reviews, I mean, Carrie would know more about this than me because she actually represents a lot of chefs. But, you know, it is, I think, sometimes a feeling of chef versus critic. And you know, I think Thomas Keller responded in a way that really showed a lot of respect for the institution that is the New York Times.
Yeah. No, great points. Yeah, I agree with all that. And I think, people did pick up that the Ryan Sutton wrote on that on Eater, but it wasn't, I mean, Eater isn't as big of a platform, at least around, I mean, the New York Times is, I don't know, people like us were reading Eater, but maybe, I mean, it's growing, true. But I feel when it's something goes in the New York Times, it's like, yeah, it affects and reaches out to more people, but you're absolutely right. So there. Okay, that's our news this week. We're going to take one more break, come back. I'm going to do my solo dining experience, and then we'll have the final question. So stay with us. This is All in the Industry on Heritage Radio Network.
Music for this break is brought to you by RecTech, and this one is called Dues Paid.
Welcome back to All in the Industry on Heritage Radio Network. I'm your host, Sherry Bayer. It's time for my solo dining experience. This week, it's at Mido. Here's the rundown. Location, 399 St. Martin Street, Miraflores, Lima, Peru. The concept, blending the culinary boundaries between Peru and Japan with a Nikkei menu that focuses on Japanese flavors and techniques under a distinct Peruvian vision. The executive chef, Mitsuharu Tsumaru, with head chef Cesar Choi and pastry chef Dalia Cifuentes. So why did I go? Because I was in Lima on a solo trip checking out its amazing food scene, and I heard incredible things about this restaurant. My experience. So my lovely industry friend, Maria Elena, who was my episode 103 guest, she gave Mitsuharu a heads up that I was coming in solo. And I was then very lucky to receive extra royal treatment. I was seated at the sushi counter and expecting to enjoy the current Nikkei tasting menu, but instead I was given a preview of its upcoming tasting menu, and it was called 200 Miles. Course after course, I was blown away. What did I get? So the menu consisted of about 14 beautifully presented courses. Names from dim sum, churipan, nigiris with lobster and momiji. There was a course called sand. There were desserts called reef and mussel. I really, just saying it isn't going to put justice on it. I will post some pictures. But really, each course, I was very impressed. It was amazing. The ambiance. It's a casually sophisticated, energetic space in a stylish multi-level building. There's an impressive rope installation covering the entire dining room, which appears as the Peruvian and Japanese flags by different directions. I'd say it's perfect for any food lover, whether dining alone or with friends. Interesting tidbit, Mido is currently ranked number 13 on the world's 50 best list and number 5 on Latin America's 50 best list. Mitsuharu uses rare ingredients and cooking techniques from the Amazon jungle to add another layer of depth to its intricate style. Personal fun fact, I was the only one in the restaurant who had this special menu. Apparently, I was only the third or fourth person to try it. I would say hashtag spoiled. Many thanks to Mitsuharu and his team and my server Fabrizio for the wonderful Peruvian hospitality. Now, the cost was $150, but full disclosure, I was comped. Would I go back? Of course. Website is Maido.pe, and that's M-A-I-D-O. So it was quite spectacular, and I was really, really spoiled, and I didn't expect it. So I'm very grateful. Have you guys... been to Lima, Peru?
I haven't. I don't know about you, Mike.
Have not.
But
I know Maria Elena.
But now I want to go.
Who to ask now?
I mean, I always wanted to go, but now that sounded delicious.
Yeah, it blew me away. This whole meal. I mean, the cross between Peruvian and Japanese cuisine. It was really, really different than anything I've ever had. So. Okay, it's time for the final question. So next week, my guest is Kate Edwards. She's of Kate Edwards Consulting, a top New York City-based restaurant consulting agency. So Carrie and Mike, what would you like to ask Kate?
Oh, boy. Mike, do you have a burning question?
Oh, I'm all festival all the time now, so we could ask Kate to come to our festival.
Okay.
Yeah. Would you like to come to Feast next year? I would ask Kate about how is she advising her clients on the tipping policies, and is she seeing a change there with minimum wage increases? Because that's a lot of what our clients want to talk to us about right now.
Oh, that's a great question. I mean, I was going to ask you, I mean, what is tipping? Is there a change happening there in the restaurants? It has been in New York?
Yeah.
Okay.
Some people are trying it where it's all-inclusive. A couple of restaurants have done it. Some have been successful. Some have not been. But I think a lot of our restaurants are just seeing it as a tidal wave, a very, very slow-moving tidal wave that's going to come over the next few years and separate the men from the boys and the women from the girls a little bit because, as the minimum wage increases, it's going to force people to look at their business plans and their profits and losses in a different way. That's what I'm hearing from our restaurant tours, restaurant owners, and they're just kind of nervous about it. So I would, if I'm a restaurant consultant, I'm wondering, she must have an incredible perspective on that.
Yeah, no, I'm so glad you asked that. I think it's a terrific question. We'll certainly talk about it. And side note, publicist to publicist, I just want to say I'm in awe of everything you do as a PR person out there with your company and representing so many amazing chefs and restaurants. So,
well, right back at you.
I'm
in awe of you doing that in the Big Apple in New York City. I'm like, man, Portland's one thing, but New York is another.
Yeah, well, thank you. But I think it's not easy doing PR, but I feel like I don't know. There's a strong dining scene out there in Portland, and you're representing most of it. So.
There is. I mean, well, we are lucky because there's a strong dining scene, a strong interest in food here and beverage and artisan products. And isn't it wonderful that that's, again, what we get to do for a living? So I definitely feel really grateful. I'm grateful that you're coming to see us very, very soon.
I know. Thank you. I will be there tomorrow, late afternoon. And
oh my gosh,
looking forward to it. It's gonna be. I was thinking as you guys were talking about the after parties. I'm like, all right, weekend, no sleep.
get your drinking shoes on and do it for us because we have to. Do those early morning things. But I think, let's have a feast high five when you get here.
Absolutely. Well, I'm excited to be coming, and I appreciate so much you guys coming on the show today, because I know you have a lot going on, being that the festival's kicking off tomorrow. So thank you for coming on the show. It's been a lot of fun.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Okay, I'm going to wrap up, tell everyone who I've been talking to. So my guests today have been Carrie Welsh and Mike Thielen, the co-founders of Feast Portland. It's a premier food and wine festival of the Pacific Northwest, presented by Bon Appetit. It's taking place September 15th to 18th, starting tomorrow. Check them out at their website, feastportland.com. On social media, Twitter and Snapchat at FeastPDX, at Instagram, FeastPortland, hashtag FeastPDX, and apparently there's another hashtag FeastWeek. So you can find those, and you can find out more about Carrie and Mike, their companies, littlegreenpickle.com, CarriePDX, at CarriePDX is her handle. And Mike is boltedservices.com, and his handle is Mike Thielen, at Mike Thielen. You can find me at Sherry Bayer, at Bayer PR, at All Industry. My Facebook page is All in the Industry. My websites are bayerpublicrelations.com and sherrybayer.com. As a reminder, all of our shows are archived at heritageradionetwork.org, and we're on iTunes and Stitcher. Many thanks to my show's fall season sponsor. It's One House Hospitality Headhunters. Their website is one-house.com. Twitter at @one_house. Instagram at @onehouse. And that's spelled O-N-E-H-A-U-S. Thanks to my fabulous engineer, Pierre, for pulling this all together. And thank you all for listening. I'll be back next week with another live show. I'm Sherry Bayer. Hope you'll tune in then. Ciao.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions at any time at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening. Everybody gets low, but there ain't no